Yeah, thank you, Siegfried and Roy. Welcome. Welcome to the Technorama Lounge here at Chuck Chat Towers, where we take a lighthearted look at tech, science fiction, and all things geek. We've got a great show for you tonight, including On This Day in Tech History, Geek Thoughts, The Media Corner, and Hacks and Strange Stories. If you need another drink, we're having 2-for-1 specials at your refrigerator. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Welcome to Technorama. This is show number 112. I know I screwed up the last one and said it was 110. That was really 111. This is show 112 for May 25th, 2006. I am your host, Chuck Tomasi, and with me is not Craig Stepp. It's Steve Pruitt from MotoCast.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, Steve, I messed up. I was supposed to say, this is the show that doesn't cause embarrassing wet stains. With me is the man passing out the antiperspirant, Steve Pruitt.
Yes, that's my job here. I'm Chuck's towel boy.
It is towel day. We'll explain that in a little bit. Coming up on tonight's show, we've got, among the regular things, we've got listeners looking for answers. We've got a chat with Mr. Steve over here on the guest couch from MotoCast. We have our first installment of Remember When? And we've got a homework assignment for you. More cool stuff that you just can't live without. That's all coming up in just a moment. Right after
This Day in Tech History,
Steve is a loyal listener and knows the show forwards and backwards, so he's going to do it backwards tonight.
Yeah, right.
On This Day in Tech History for May 25th, 2006. This is May 25th, it's the 145th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 220 days remaining in 2006. It was on this date in 1925 that John T. Scopes is indicted for teaching Darwin's theory of evolution. And the National Forensics League of the U.S. is founded on the same date in 1925. 53 years ago, at the Nevada test site, the United States conducts its first and only nuclear artillery test. And it was on this date in 1955 that Kanchenjunga, the third highest peak in the world, is scaled successfully for the first time. It was on this date in 1961 that U.S. President John F. Kennedy announces, before a special joint session of Congress, his goal to initiate a project to put a man on the moon before the end of the decade. 40 years ago today, Explorer 32 launches. And on this date in 1977, Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, opens in theaters and eventually becomes the highest-grossing film of all time. Exactly 6 years later, Star Wars Episode VI, Return of the Jedi, is released in theaters. And it was 5 years ago today that 32-year-old Eric Wiehenmeyer of Boulder, Colorado, becomes the first blind person to reach the summit of Mount Everest. And with him was 64-year-old Sherman Bull of New Canaan, Connecticut, who became the oldest person to reach the summit of Mount Everest. Happy birthday goes out on this date to Pieter Zeeman, the Dutch physicist and Nobel Prize winner. I've probably massacred that name too, and Jorga will tell me about that one as well. Happy birthday to the French neurologist Jean-Alexandre Barré, born on this date in 1880. and Russian inventor and namesake of the Sikorsky helicopter, Igor Sikorsky, was born on this date in 1889. The Nobel Prize-winning German physicist Jack Steinberger was born on this date in 1921. And cosmonaut Georgi Grechko was born on this date in 1931. English actor Ian McKellen, best known to many as Gandalf the Grey, turns 68 today. The man behind the voice of Yoda, Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear, and many others, Frank Oz, turns 62 today. And finally, actor and comedian Mike Myers turns 43 today. Don't forget, this is Towel Day in memory of Douglas Adams. Put a towel on your head. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for May 25th, 2006.
Oh my God, they grow out of those pods.
This is Summer Brooks from the Dragon Page, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Chuck Chat Technorama. Can you figure out who's the one and who's the zero?
The thunder's rolling in, ladies and gentlemen. I hope we make it through this show. Of course, I'm recording to a laptop, but I guess the mixer is on AC power.
Yeah.
If we finish this in one take, it'll be amazing. Not quite that bad. But it is. It was pouring cats and dogs. No, raining cats and dogs.
Throwing. Oh, it was pouring.
Throwing cats and dogs. What does it do?
Skybird, this is Dropkick with a red dash alpha message in two parts. Break.
Mail call, sir.
That's the mail call for tonight. I like that one. First one's from listener Chris. He says, hey guys, just a quick note about hard disk manufacturers. Oh, we were going over hard drives on the last show.
Oh, yeah.
And I mentioned Quantum and Seagate and Western Digital.
And, yeah.
And he said, Quantum hasn't manufactured a drive in years. They sold their business to Maxtor back in 2001.
Duh.
All right, who invited the peanut gallery? It's going to be a long show. The players currently are Seagate, Western Digital, Hitachi, and Samsung.
Yes.
So now we are all a little smarter. Have a good one, Have a good one, guys. Love, Chris. No, it wasn't love.
Thank you, Chris.
Chris, we're all now a little smarter and, well, a little smarter anyway. So much for the good looking.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can hear that thunder. That's getting louder.
Sorry, I had chili for lunch. So,
oh. Also, we hear from Joel on the Enterprise Shipyard. I said, I thought the NCC-1701E was built in Utopia Planitia on Jupiter. And he writes back and says, no! The NCC-1701D was built at Utopia Planitia. If you remember watching Next Generation, they had a couple of episodes around that. The E was built in San Francisco. Source? Memory Alpha. And memory-alpha.org does, in fact, have it. You can also see it at memory-alpha.org. That's their whole wiki. It's fun to see what other people do in their free time, other than podcasting, I guess.
Are you right much, Chuck? Or do you just blabber and then let the listeners correct?
This is kind of a podcast version of Wikipedia. Okay. Say something, let the public correct.
Exactly.
Hey, kids, pigs can fly. Yeah. I got a free laptop.
Yeah, Vista's coming out this year.
Ah. Oh, you're not invited back. No showing up the host.
Oh, sorry.
And we also have an email from Charles Stell, our man from Arkansas. He's looking for some project management software. I also can't talk. So what I do say is usually wrong. What I don't say is usually babble.
Mispronounced.
Yeah. Howdy, Chuck and Craig, of course. Help! I'm about to go nuts due to the large number of custom projects I have. Is there a project management program that lets one person handle a bunch of small projects without becoming a slave to the software? Open source would be nice. I would like something that would not only run on Windows box, but could run from a USB thumb drive. Am I asking too much? A spreadsheet can be used, but seeing the big picture is a bit blurry. The boss gets a bit testy when I use a Sharpie on the walls. Thanks, Charles Stell. Oh, by the way, his boss is his wife.
Yeah. You want to keep her, true. Keep your boss happy.
Yeah, keep them.
Trust me.
It's only funny if they know I'm your boss.
Now they do.
And we got a response today from Craig, but we're also looking for other listener feedback. Craig writes back, using Linux, there's always Project in GNOME. It is much like MS Project. A web application that I can recommend is .project, which is available at .project.net. My boss uses this to keep an eye on things. It is a little detailed, but nice. And wow, I just found this! Apparently, while he was writing it, he just found it. I'm not sure how he writes and browses the web at the same time. As we get more lightning, flash, flash, flash. Wait for the thunder. There's a big, long URL that I'm not going to elaborate on here. It's at openworkbench.org. It looks impressive, and I will download it. There are a lot of open source options, since to have open source stuff, you have to manage these projects, so there are a lot of ways to do that. Thank you, Craig. We have instant response even before the show is produced, but we are looking for others who might be able to help Charles Stell. If you have a response, send it to Chuck at chuckchat.com, and I'll make sure that Charles and or the rest of the people get that.
So were all those options Linux or what?
Craig's was Linux.
All right.
At .project.net. I'm not sure about openworkbench.org.
Okay.
You have 937 messages, all of which are marked urgent.
Incoming call from Bob Pankratz.
So I took the initiative in creating the internet.
Houston, we've had a problem.
Hello, Craig and Chuck, it's Bob from Appleton. Yes, I am now caught up. I am no longer behind. I am now back in the future. Thanks to Craig's wonderfully long episodes for those couple days that where Chuck was gone. Thank you very much, Craig, for the trip to the time machine. As far as you and your relatives coming up here to teach us a lesson, we're not worried. We have our high-tech defense system. We will simply litter the lawn with iPods with recordings of NASCAR. You and your relatives will come running up the lawn, and, well, we won't see you for another 4 hours as you watch things go round and round on the tiny screens. Have a wonderful day. Bye. Hey, Chuck. On the last episode, May 22nd, you said on your trip to Malaysia that you had problems getting your Gmail forwarding to work. I have news for you. You can learn all about Gmail. There's this really cool thing. It's on your iPod. It's called the Gmail Podcast. Some Gmail expert out there is kind of attempting to get into the podcasting world, and apparently he gives you instructions on the proper use of Gmail. Maybe you should head over there and check it out, and then you won't have those problems again in the future. Bye.
Sounds like a genius.
So a couple hours later, I'm finishing up this episode of Technorama, and I hear Chuck talking about Malaysian driving, and he's talking about how wonderful it is, and then he proceeds to describe little cars going zip, zip, zip every which way and all this chaos. For those that have never traveled with Chuck, he thinks that that's normal travel driving. Just ask him. He likes to pull out into traffic. Chuck, I'm glad you finally found a place where they drive like you do on vacation and on a trip. Hope it was a lot of fun.
Well, Bob, you know, I only drive like that when my boss makes me work 20-hour days!
Yeah. Preach on.
We were in Milpitas, California for about a total of 1 day, 1.5 days, and got about 4 hours worth of sleep. Actually, I didn't work that long. I took a few hours and drove down to Gilroy, and met my brother. He drove halfway up from
Los Angeles?
No, Monterey Bay.
Hold on. Oh, okay. I was going to get
And I drove down, and we met about halfway because it was about 2 hours each way. Mm-hmm. And we had a nice dinner together. That was way back in the day. And then after we got done with that job, we hopped on a plane up to Seattle and did that one. That was my U.S. server tour that I still have a shirt for.
2001.
So I only pull out into traffic when I'm really tired. So Bob will probably laugh and go, yeah, nice excuse.
Yeah, that Gmail podcast sounds interesting, Chuck.
Where can you find that?
Where could I find that? And Is it something worthwhile listening to?
I hear it's short, concise, and very informative.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Who paid you to say that?
I right-clicked on the selection I made, and I would not have the copy option to save my life, nor could I hit Control-C.
Could Grease Monkey be involved?
He's there.
Welcome to the Firefox Forum.
This is the Firefox Clearinghouse.
Yet another proof that magnetism isn't good for computer stuff.
Man, I can't get connected.
What was that?
This is Steve Holden from TechNewsRadio.com, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig of Technorama Podcast.
It's time for the shout-outs to the chat room. We've got a whole bunch of the regulars. Bumbleroot, K.L. Wright, Mark Shepard, Stingray is with us, Tim Elliott, Wiley Rabbit, and
Zahadoom.
Ooh, he does that good. I want a soundbite of that. Also, I want to wish a happy birthday from the listener birthday calendar. You can find that in our wiki. Want to put your name on there? We will look for your name as it comes up. Happy birthday to Eli from Israel. His birthday is on May 26th. So wishing you a happy birthday from all of us here at Technorama. Well, both of us here at Technorama. That didn't work out quite right.
Smooth.
Smooth and swarmy.
Faster at typing than a bullet. More powerful at debugging code than a locomotive. Able to leak tall servers at a single bound. Yes, it's Super Geek. Starring Craig Stepp as the man of code, and Chuck Chet as the tenacious reporter, Jimmy Eldap. Make sure you catch the next exciting episode by tuning in to Technorama, a Friends in Tech production.
And now, the news, with me.
News today is Thursday. May 25th is Towel Day. This is an annual event in memory of Douglas Adams, and we want you to wear a towel. Here's your homework assignment. Take a picture of you with a towel, usually worn around the neck like they did in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, because Douglas Adams wrote Hitchhiker's Guide, and he had the whole thing about the towels and whatnot, and we want you to take a picture and put it on Flickr. If you don't have a Flickr account, they're free, flickr.com. Get yourself an account, upload the picture. It takes all of about 30 seconds, and let's have some fun and tag them with Technorama, Towel, and Douglas Adams, and see what you come up with. It's rather interesting. I have somewhere in here, where's my other towel thing? Oh, somewhere in my notes I have the actual full definition of about Towel Day. You can get it from Wikipedia if you just look up Towel Day. There's a whole thing about it. Oh, it's right there from the handy link that Craig provided. Thursday is Towel Day, as I mentioned. Oh, this is a different link. This is actually the one I was looking for. To quote Hitchhiker's Guide from the Galaxy, a towel, it says, is about the most massively useful thing an interstellar hitchhiker can have. Partly, it has great practical value. You can wrap it around you for warmth as you bound across the cold moons of Jaglan Beta, or as they say in Britain, Beta. You can lie on it on a brilliant marble sanded beaches of I knew I'd screw that up. Santragine 5, inhaling the heady sea vapors. You can sleep under it beneath the stars which shine so redly on the desert world of Cockrafoon. And it goes on and on with the whole quote from there, but it tells you all the things you can do with a towel. Most importantly, a towel has immense psychological value. For some reason, if a strag, which is a non-hitchhiker, discovers that a hitchhiker has a towel with him, he will automatically assume that he is also in possession of a toothbrush, face flannel, soap, tin of biscuits, flask, compass, map, ball of string, gnat spray, wet weather gear, spacesuit, etc., etc. Furthermore, the strag will then happily lend the hitchhiker any of these or a dozen other items that the hitchhiker might accidentally have lost. What the strag will think is that any man who can hitch the length and breadth of the galaxy, rough it, slum it, struggle against terrible odds, win through, and still knows where his towel is, clearly a man to be reckoned with. So Steve and I both have our towels on, if you're watching on the webcam, and that's in memory of Douglas Adams.
And nothing else.
Absolutely nothing else. The reason I played that Phil Clark Super Geek Sweeper was because Craig threw in a link. Yes, the Superman movie is coming, and even though Craig is not with us on this particular episode, he has put in a link to a wonderful PvP online cartoon that kind of sums up his enthusiasm about the whole thing, and the geek is, you'll see what happens in the last panel. It's
it's pure Craig.
Well, that's one way to put it, yes. We also have news that Wisconsin enacts a tough GPS law for sex offenders. Apparently what they're doing is they're using I'll just read it to you. This is from upi.com. Madison, Wisconsin, May 23rd. Wisconsin has enacted a law that requires paraled child molesters to wear a global positioning system tracking device for at least 20 years. Mm-hmm. Expanded GPS will help law enforcement know exactly where these people are every minute of every day, says Governor Jim Doyle as he signed the bill into law Monday in Madison. Under the system, warnings would be issued if sex offenders get near a school, park, or other places frequented by children.
Have you seen these things, Chuck?
No.
They're fairly large.
Are these the ankle things?
Yes, the ankle. I try to figure out the size. Probably about the size of maybe a checkbook. I mean,
holy catfish.
They're big.
Like the size of a lockbox on a car or a house?
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. It's not like it's very slimline and comfortable. It's like
the old ball and chain.
Exactly.
Yikes.
Well, also, I was wondering, do you think they can register themselves as geocaches?
Well, I don't know. The link where it took us had a nice picture of a woman who I wouldn't mind geocaching. Hey, give me the coordinates of the school. Yeah, what if you're geocaching and it takes you to a place where kids frequent?
Yeah. Sorry.
Whoa, man, check it out. I'm geocaching for 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be cumbersome for... I don't know how people can operate. I mean, granted, they've lost the right to be normal at that point, but...
Did you check out the Google Maps that have the sex offenders like mm-hmm. in your neighborhood?
Yes.
That's pretty scary stuff.
Yes, it is. And you'd be surprised if...
I'm shocked.
I was surprised.
Because
my house, there was a lot.
Yeah, our girls are getting ready for some independence as they approach their teen years, and I'm looking around our neighborhood going, okay, girls... No going anywhere alone.
Exactly.
Here's a gun. A stun gun.
Just get them a GPS receiver and also they can track all the perverts.
Hey!
Beep, 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 beep.
I'm either getting close to the geocache or... Oh, kind of not funny.
No.
And, of course, X-Men 3 is opening up this weekend. And if you plan on seeing X-Men, The Last Stand this weekend... we expect most of you are. That being the case, apart from the regular reporting on the movie, IGN FilmForce now asks you to do one more important thing. If you're an X-Men fan, you'll regret it if you don't. At the theater this weekend, when the credits roll, when the audience begins to filter out the exits, keep your seat. No, they're not doing outtakes. There's an Easter egg at the end of the movie. And you'll thank yourself when it's over. So stay till the very end. And I honestly don't know what it is, but I hear it's pretty good.
It's probably an advertisement for like Kellogg's or something.
I put in a Technorama. Stick around. Of course, the only people who would hear it would be the people.
Well, yeah.
People who listen to this. Hey, I couldn't help myself, but I had a whole lot of fun when Craig had a sore throat on the last show. So I had to throw this one together. How are you, Craig?
I'm good.
You sound good there, Grandpa.
The Illusion Islands.
The Elusive Islands?
It's next door to Fantasy Island.
The plane.
Tattoo, why are you chain smoking again?
The plane, boss.
Did it sound okay to you?
You sound bad.
Shut up, man.
Hi, this is Larry.
And this is Paul.
From Paul.com Security Weekly. You can reach us at Paul.com.com. That's PAULDOTCOM.com. Your source for IT security news, vulnerabilities, and research.
You're listening to Technorama with Chuck Tomasi and Craig Stepp.
Damn it, Jim. Take me back to the podcast.
Captain, I can't hold it any longer.
You're going to have to hold it just a little bit longer. Steve?
Yes, Chuck.
What's your podcast called?
I have a little podcast which was born here at the Chuck Chat Studios.
Way back when we were just a card table.
Yeah. Yeah, version 1.0. It's called Motocast. It's a motorcyclist audio resource.
Who's it for?
If you like to ride motorcycles, any types of motorcycles, you'll probably enjoy what we talk about. We have pretty much wide variety of topics. We cover innovations that just directly relate to motorcycling. We talk to people in the industry. And then we're also part of the larger group. We kind of cheated and took from Friends in Tech, and we made the Motorcycle Podcast Group. And there's about 10 of us with motorcycle.
MPG?
MPG, like that's
miles
correct.
Per gallon?
Yes. And we actually have a group show we do. We do a little round table, and then we're also starting a little feature show that each member of the group will do a little short segment, and we put that together. So there's about 10 people in the group, and that the link to that can be had right off our site. So we're at motocast.libsyn.com, and we have about 25 shows. Me and my co-host, they kind of come in and out. Right now, currently, we have Nate and Dr. Dave, who is actually on a race team for the American Motorcycle Association Pro Race Series. And he's a team manager, so he gives reports. We call it the AMA Raw. Then we also have other things we do. We go over great roads because motorcyclists are all about riding, so
yep.
Do great road segments. And then we'll also talk like tech and talk about things like heads-up displays, GPSs, heated clothing, anything related to motorcycles.
Now, you take a few rides every year. Have you been to travbuddy.com?
Yes.
Have you mapped out like some routes and things and yep. Show people where you go and post pictures?
Well,
and
I haven't done anything. I've checked out the site, but it looks interesting. I mean, there's things like that in certain motorcycle groups, like the BMW motorcycle riders.
Mm-hmm.
They have this thing called the Anonymous Book, and it's basically everybody signs up and you agree when you get in the Anonymous Book that you're going to, if you receive a call from somebody else, they usually need help or directions or any kind of, you know, if they're traveling through the area, and you're just supposed to help your fellow motorcyclist out. So this is kind of like that, but just on a more global, you know, basis.
What's your latest show about? Just to give them a flavor of what you're talking about.
Well, because it's back in the riding season and I don't have that much time to podcast, Dr. Dave has been doing some AMA Raws, but our latest, there's a controversy happening in the motorcycle industry about safety helmets,
mm-hmm.
Motorcycle helmets. One of the national magazines did a story that said, I don't know if anybody's heard of Snell. Snell is a national standard.
Snell!
But Snell is a national standards and testing. Basically, they're just pure testing, but they create their own standards for helmet safety.
Mm-hmm.
And this organization has been going since the 50s and making helmets better. Well, this magazine basically provided a counterpoint saying that they're making helmets too hard for their impacts. Too hard. And because when they test, they have to test the helmet manufacturers. It's basically like it's a self-compliance. You say you're going to test to this standard, and then you build the helmet to that standard, and then they test it based on how it's constructed. You know, basically they follow your spec and they test it to see if it's going to do what you say it's going to do. But their standard requires 2 drops on the same part of the helmet. And what this magazine was saying is that the because you have to construct it so hard because it has to take 2 hits,
mm-hmm.
is that it's transferring too much energy to the brain. And they're saying that when you're on a motorcycle,
okay.
And that was designed because if you can imagine back in the 50s, if you're in a race car, you're strapped in and your head is bouncing around. And it's most likely going to hit the same spot. And they're saying if a motorcyclist crashes and their head hits something because they are tumbling in a random nature, that they're actually going to hit in different spots of the helmet. So they don't need that stiffer shell, which will transfer more energy to the brain. And this, the magazine was arguing that the higher amount of G's that is transferred to the brain is, it's bad for you. You know, as you increase, it's bad, but they didn't tell you how bad it was. They kind of made a scale that's based on a rough medical industry standard, but that hasn't been proven. Well, we had Ed Becker of Snell, the company, come and explain his half of it, why they do what they do. And it's real interesting to hear his side of it because he really hasn't had a fair shake because he's got to go to the motorcyclist magazines and try to get his story out. And granted, they're all kind of gathering their wagons around. So we gave him a chance to have an open forum and explain his side of the story. So that was one of our latest episodes.
Cool.
So
you're talking to the people out there in the industry.
Yep. And there's some, a lot of cool technology. I think people here on Technorama, like there's, they develop a heads-up device for motorcyclists that will tell the motorcycle rider, it basically mounts to their helmet and gives them speed, gear indication, and RPM so they know when to shift. And it mounts on it your helmet so it's just out of your peripheral vision, and that way you don't have to look down at the gauges. You just look out at the horizon. And
don't you normally do it like sound and feel?
Sometimes, but it's nice to know what gear you're in and speed. And plus, it's got a radar input, so you can plug your radar detector in there, and if you happen to be... not obeying the law, you don't have to worry.
Nobody does that.
Yeah, because the problems where they are illegal, are legal, I should say. You have to put the radar detector somewhere where you can see it, but that's hard to do on a motorcycle. So this will put it right up out of your periphery. It's at a 17-foot focal point, so your eyes don't have to correct like if you look down at the gauges.
Okay, yeah.
If you're older and you know your vision's a little bit slower, it may take you a while to readjust. So it does have a lot of benefits. I've been using the unit for about 4,000 miles now, and I can't ride the bike when it, because it lasts about 20 hours on two AA batteries, and it communicates wirelessly to a sending unit on the motorcycle, and when it runs out, I find it hard to ride because I'm always looking up to find that information up there. So, and the owner of the company and the founder, Dominic Dobson, who is a former IndyCar racer, we talked to him on MotoCast, and he was explaining that it gets so bad that people get used to this that they actually run out of gas on their motorcycles because they're not looking down at the gauges anymore. And I can believe it because it is a whole different way to ride. So we talked to people like Dominic about tech stuff, and then we're talking to people in the industry. Plus, we just... a lot of it is just my co-host Nate and Dr. Dave and sometimes Brandon just give our experiences and opinions on products that we use and we get a chance to check out because all of us are avid motorcyclists.
Well, if anybody out there is interested in motorcycling, certainly check it out. Motocast.libsyn.com. A member of MPG.
Yes.
Or how do you usually say that?
MPG, Motorcycle Podcast Group.
Wow.
The Motorcycle Podcast Group.
We've had an influence.
Yeah. Part of the Chuck Chack Network.
I don't think you get that anymore. Do you still use my intro?
No.
Oh.
Sorry. That lasted like 3 or 4 episodes.
Bummer.
We can start using it again for small feet.
Was that get a leg over or something? Hey, before we go into the next segment, remember when Victor Cahiao of the Typical PC User and Typical Mac User podcast sent us a picture, rather humorous, of Leonard Nimoy and his Spock character from the original series. I don't know where they came up with. These were some ads or something, some public service posters that ran in the 70s.
They were black and white, so, you know, they were back a ways.
And Spock is holding up his hand, doing the Vulcan thing, live long and prosper, and he says, don't smoke, live long and prosper. And then Craig comes up and finds one of William Shatner in his classic Kirk, and he's kind of leaning over to one side with this suave look, and it says, be cool, stay in school. I can just imagine what else they could come up with.
Yeah. You know, geez, what are we going to put in Tiger Beat this month?
Nurse Chapel going, eat cheese. Remember, fiber's good.
Or Scotty, I've given it all she's got.
I tried shoving a wiener in the warp drive, but it didn't do a bit of good.
Yeah, that picture of Spock looks like you can Photoshop that and put like a cigarette between his fingers.
Big old doob stick. Yeah.
Don't smoke, man. Put a big Rastafarian hat on.
professor?
A floppy disk, or cassette tape, is made up of ferric oxide. When a other magnet comes in proximity, it goes...
I think that's what I said, Chuck.
Thanks, Mr. Wizard!
The Google Web Accelerator.
The Google Web Accelerator.
Nope, no reverb on that one, buddy.
Oh man.
Implying I had been surfing for 6 hours. Back, ye demon Google Web Decelerator, from my system and everything web connected.
This is Lance Heath from the Digital Experience Podcast, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig from Technorama.
All right, new segment called Remember When. I don't have a bumper to bring that one in yet, but we'll make one. Remember When! This is my Remember When. It goes back a ways. Remember punch cards? Yeah, got a whole stack of them right here, buddy. Remember them. It's tough. It's been like, what, 30 seconds since I've seen one. Well, you know what the good thing about punch cards was? It taught you how to be a really good typer. Because key punches were the crappiest editors. I mean, it looked like a keyboard. It was a little desk set up, and you loaded your card, fresh blank cards in the hopper, and then as you typed, it went, and it would punch the cards as soon as you hit do it or enter or send it or
return.
Punch it, whatever it was. Yeah, return. And if you got one wrong, you had to type the line all over.
Could you just get some tape out?
F-O-R space I space equals space 1 space T-O space. And you had to type like that. And if you got that wrong, you go, oh, man. And then what's worse is you had to keep those punch cards in the right order. I mean, there was no saving you if you dropped those and you had a stack of about 200 cards. You're done.
Unless were they numbered?
No. Nobody wasted their time. And then you take the stack of punch cards over to the card reader and they sit in this shoebox for about an hour. Until the operator sitting behind the desk got off their fat hiney and ran yours and the other 10 batches through the thing. And they go, because they had the special job control cards that went right on top. Oh. You couldn't just do this yourself. And like, well, I could do that. What are they paying you, minimum? And you run these things through. And then you look up on the wall and it says, job turnaround time is 3 hours. You had to wait 3 hours to go from that card reader through the batch processing engine and get a hard copy just to get your program. It got up around 4-6 hours at the end of the semester when everybody's trying to get their final projects done and the program's a little more complex and all you're trying to do is run dang tic-tac-toe from punch cards. All right? But it made you a really good debugger. When it took 4 hours to test your program and find out it had a bug, you quickly deduced the bugs and got rid of them. So I want to send some of today's coders through that boot camp, and I was having a bit of retrospect going, oh my gosh, times really haven't changed that much. You know our ERP system at work?
Yeah.
It's a batch engine. Now, granted, it doesn't take 4 to 6 hours, but it's basically the same thing.
It does sometimes.
You sit at your machine, and you submit a job, and the job runs in a batch queue, and oh my gosh. I mean, all they did is replace the paper with a CRT, and it's pretty much the same thing. It's a lovely thing. So that's my Remember When for this episode. We want to hear from you if you remember old technology. I don't care whether it's, you know, some old game machine that you have, if you had an original PlayStation or Game Boy or your first tape drive on your Commodore 64.
VIC-20.
VIC-20 was even more fun. You were lucky if you got a tape drive. Sometimes you just turned the thing off and your program ran away and you wanted to play another game, you typed it in from the magazine.
Hey, I've got to Remember When.
What do you got?
Remember when Craig used to do this show?
That was a long time ago. Man. In podcast years, that's like 6 years.
He's so over now. He's like yesterday. It's like Matt and Katie.
So what are you doing every Wednesday and Sunday night, Steve? Not that I'm coming on to you or anything.
Hey, baby.
Geek Thoughts.
The first place to look for information is in the section of the manual where you least expect to find it.
Alrighty, we've got a couple more things in the Geek Library. We have a way to reinstall XP and put your original into a virtual machine. This is kind of cool. They use a Cronus True image to take a snapshot of the machine. The article goes on to say, is your system now run like a dog and your start menu is four columns wide because of all the crap you loaded on your machine? Well, this is a way to take it and put it into a virtual machine, and then you can reset it over and over and just kind of makes it a little more fun.
What would the purpose? Why would anybody do that? I mean, is it common to have Windows build up crap on you or what?
Yeah, over time, everybody's machine runs slower and slower, you know, whether it's from spyware or from things you try and then delete and the uninstallers don't really work.
So basically, it's like re-imaging your machine and starting over fresh.
Yeah, because virtual machines, you can go back to the original config and you're done.
It's like an Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah, basically, you take your good way to put it. We're ready to go again. Whoa, look how fast it boots. And Craig also put something in the Geek Library about 70s toy commercials, but unfortunately, I cannot get to it. YouTube seems to be unresponsive, or at least this particular episode is not responding, but I'm curious to go look. And of course, if we weren't running out of time, we would go more into Mad Marv's marvelous markups. He's got things, a color illusion, where you stare at a picture, an inverse image, and then you put your mouse over the cursor, or put the mouse over the picture, and it looks like it's in color, even though it's in black and white. It's a cool effect. Because this is X-Men weekend, we have an X-Men theme going on here. There is a listing via Dig for the top 25 X-Men. We will leave you to figure out who the number one is, but it wasn't who I suspected, nor Steve.
Nope.
We'll just save you some time. It ain't Wolverine. There. Now you want to go check it out, don't you?
Ain't Juggernaut either.
Meg Magazine has some links to some fire art photos and video, which is kind of interesting. One of my favorites, the DIY binary watch. This is a little complex, and you have to get really good at soldering and taking things apart, but a further link about a guy who was passing out circuit board business cards. He had his name and number etched on a PCB, was wearing one of these when he went to an interview. His thing looks like, you know, a Gigapet thing hanging off his wrist. It's a little chunky, but
it's an answer to a question that nobody asked.
But you know what? If he went in for a tech interview, I built this.
You know? See what I got?
Wow.
I got this binary watch.
Got some roaches in the basement you can kill, too.
Gee, that's 70s technology. You're hired.
And more cool stuff. Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace, is rumored to be coming out in 3D. We've got a link to that.
Oh, yay. 3D Jar Jar Binks.
Misa look more bungee on the big screen.
Misa puppet.
I don't know. The pod racers would be kind of cool in 3D.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah. Have a few beers and get that on the big screen.
Watch Jar Jar get electrocuted.
Repeat that.
So we will leave those links and all the rest in the Geek Library for you in Mad Marv's Marvelous Markups. I think I'm going to stick with that name unless someone can come up with a better
Sounds good to me.
That takes us to the end of the show. Steve, you've got the script.
All right. You can contact us through the listener line at 206-222-CHAT, C-H-A-T, for those who can't spell. That's 2428. You can also email Chuck at chuck@chuckchat.com. Audio comments to chuckchat@gmail.com. Also, Craig, you can wish him well. Hope, you know, tell him to get back so I don't have to come back. I'll even do that. You can email him at craig@chuckchat.com. And remember, that's a K, Craig. Also, check out the website, www.chuckchat.com. You can go there for forums, swag, webcam, mail list, links to the show notes, and much, much more.
Tip jar.
Yeah, tip jar. Link to Motocast.
This show is a member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. The chat room is provided by freenode.net. The audio streaming provided by Scott Reynolds, who doesn't seem to be around tonight, but we wish him well as well. Oh, Monday was his anniversary. 13 years.
Yeah, congratulations, Mr. Reynolds. Man.
If you're getting this show by clicking on the link on the website, consider subscribing to get the show automatically delivered to you for free. Drop either one of us an email, Chuck or Craig at chuckchat.com, and we'll give you more information on how to do that. As always, we wish you well. We thank you for listening. And we hope that you tell at least one person this week about Technorama and what fun it really can be.
Thanks for having me on, Chuck. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for coming over. It's been a great time. Till next time, binary high five.
010.
Other way.
101.
Bender, what is it?
Oh, what an awful dream. Ones and zeros everywhere. And I thought I saw two.
It was just a dream, Bender. There's no such thing as two.